This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Tamina Kaos-G is an independent broadcast journalist and media personality and has worked with the likes of Bernama to now TV3, and she is a board member and director of the Institute of Journalists Malaysia, and she's a member of the Malaysian Media Council Protem Committee working towards establishing a Malaysian Media Council. So we're talking about journalism and the media in general. So nice to be speaking to you, Tamina.
Lovely to be on the show with you, Frida. Thanks so much for having me.
And is I pronounced it correctly, Tamina Kaos-G. That's so unique.
Yes. I mean, unique names aside, I'll just roll it off by getting started with where that name came from,
right,
and how I ended up in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. My mom's Malaysian Chinese. Mm-hmm. My father is a Parsi of Persian descent from Hyderabad in India. So I was actually born in Hyderabad. And we migrated over to Malaysia while I was a child of 10. And Here I am. Hey, presto.
All right. So, well, you came home. You came to mom's home anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, what's very interesting is with how you started your working life, and that was a teacher. So we'll talk about the teaching life and how that evolved to journalism.
Wow. Okay. So the teaching life actually began, Greta, because back when I was still in high school, getting ready for my O's, etc., our family was going through some financial difficulties, and it turned out that I had to self-support, put myself through high school and then college, university. So the one avenue that was most openly available then was tutoring. So I became a freelance tutor.
Right.
I began to specialize in prepping students for board exams, such as the SATs, O-levels, what have you. And that eventually led down to, a lot more curiosity about journalism and the media, because I did do my degree in mass communications and psychology. So I would say about a decade down the road after I had finished my university degree, I started to look for ways in which I could make my dream of being an anchoring and working in the current affairs side of media come true. But to be honest, I went through all the hoops. I'm also a musical theater kid. Did that in my childhood, in my teens, et cetera, drama and whatnot. So that eventually also led to some work in the commercial arena.
Right.
I have done, all the TVCs that you can think of,
Okay.
So, yeah. So in the by and by, what also happened was I was, of course, casting, doing screen tests, et cetera, for all variety of talk shows and fronting, so basically being in front of the camera, right? Eventually, that led to an opportunity while I was hosting talk shows for Tourism Malaysia's online channel. This was way back in, I think, 2012, 2013.
Okay.
An opportunity came up to cast for Bernama's morning show.
Right.
So things fell together neatly. That happened, and that's how I was at Bernama for about 6 years. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And some of the shows that you've done and are currently doing, right? Of course, then after that, when you got into Bernama, you had this show called Tea with Tamina. All right. So,
yes.
And what was
Tea with Tamina.
Tea. Okay. Tea. Okay. So I have to say Tea with Tamina, right? Tea with Tamina. that tongue twister. But, and what was the premise of that show?
Well, Tea with Tamina was a fantastic opportunity that Bernama actually availed to a couple of different of their broadcasters. And they asked me, so what would you like to do a show upon? And I said, my gosh, okay, let's come up with, a little blueprint. And Tea with Tamina was born, a show focusing on women, society, and commerce. We ran that twice a week. The first season actually wrapped with 50 episodes, Reda, towards 50 standalone episodes covering, we almost had 100 Malaysian women talking about all variety of topics, all the way from women's rights to social issues, teenage pregnancy, domestic violence, women in business, women in tech, women in science. And it was just, I think, a really fantastic collation of all the work I've been doing in the gender rights arena coming together as little standalone, 30-minute snippets of this is what these women or this woman is doing. This is how it's impacting society, and here's how we can do better.
Right.
Or this is great. Why does it work? Yeah. So
okay.
That to me was the real delight of being able to host and produce Tea with Tamita.
Right. I want to go in depth a little later about your interest in, you know, women empowerment and social justice and all that in just a moment. But we'll go through some of your other shows. You've got another one called The Point. Is that ongoing?
The Point currently is on hiatus, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. That was a show, Freda, that came about due to my personal frustration as a journalist when the MCO was first instated. Mm. So The Point premiered on the 10th of April. MCO, as we know, was on the 18th of March onwards, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was that little bridge of 2-3 months where everything was literally on a standstill during the early parts of the MCO.
Right.
And there were a lot of issues that were rising to the fore about inequality, unemployment, access to food, etc., particularly for our B40 and our other marginalized and vulnerable groups, right? So I decided, also on the recommendation of a couple of friends who were like, you're always talking about these issues. Why not sort of format it a little bit?
Mm.
And so we took it to Facebook Live. And the first episode was actually on food security, featuring Kanaga Nita and other organizations who were already working on the ground back in April. Yeah.
Right.
Our second episode was on domestic violence. I mean, and these are issues that are still ongoing, that have still been brought forward because of the pandemic.
Mm.
We actually wrapped with 6 episodes. Currently still on hiatus because also things got a little bit busier by the time we came to the end of May when the 6th episode was done. But I am looking to actually restarting The Point because the core of it was focusing on social issues that don't get enough of airtime or are not phrased and formatted in a manner which everyone understands.
Right.
I remember our last episode was actually in conjunction with Labor Day, May Day, the economic impacts, etc., but looking at a slightly wider context of ASEAN itself. How's ASEAN going to recover post-pandemic? And you know what? For a Facebook Live show that had zero promotion aside from our viewers, for that to be getting 20, 30, 35K views, organically, I think that was the beauty of, social media really coming together to make people and the audience who are interested in a certain sort of topic to, not just view, but people were actively discussing these issues. And when you're able to bring together the right sort of panelists, sometimes a little bit of magic happens.
Right.
We also had an episode in April that was focusing on independent journalism and how important it is in this arena. My guests were Maria Reza from Rappler, had Claire Rucato-Brown, and that episode caused a little bit of it raised the ire of certain parties. Because the show posts are being shared via Facebook on certain platforms.
Right.
But also, 20-30K views, people really starting to talk about what are the deeper seated issues of inequality that the pandemic has brought about. And I think as much as the pandemic's been incredibly difficult for a lot of people and communities, those who are in positions of privilege, having access to stable employment, etc. I think it's really raised the spirit for wanting to help, for wanting to learn, and for wanting to make a difference amongst these quarters. And Malaysians are generous at the core of it. And it's been really wonderful to see that spirit, be raised even further.
Right.
Yeah. And I think The Point was a little nutshell like that.
That was your personal project, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Personal project. I used my own Facebook page. All of that. So that was The Point. Yeah.
Okay.
To reinvigorate soon.
Okay. So now you're also doing Money Matters Now, which is on Over TV3. No, what's the prep for that?
Money Matters is, I am the new anchor for Money Matters ever since October this year. And that's been pretty wonderful, Freda. So it is a once weekly talk show, and the prep for that, of course, involves getting on board all the financial and policy makers, the movers and shakers. And I think it's really interesting because it's one of the few English language shows mm-hmm. on a primarily BM network channel. And it's been very interesting to be able to bring forth once again, not only current issues such as, let's say, Islamic finance, but also looking for female spokespersons, female experts. Right? I mean, it's a big boys club, but at the same time, there's so many more women who are working in this arena who don't often get the chance to be the spokesperson.
Right.
So I do my extra legwork and sure and see, so hey, can we be platforming a woman instead for this? Of course, the one who is equally as qualified, but who may not be the first go-to authority or person you think of.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's...
Our unconscious bias.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unconscious bias.
Right. You know, you're an independent broadcast journalist. Would you consider something full-time? And why or why not?
That's a question that I get all the time, Frida. something full-time. Okay, see, the thing is that being an independent broadcast journalist is something that sort of happened really organically for me. I was also, as I told you before, I was a freelance tutor. So I had always been in the habit of, you know, working for myself.
Right.
And it's not just about making your own hours, but with journalism, as I moved deeper and deeper into it, I realized that being an independent is what also availed me the opportunity to maintain an independent voice.
Right.
And to speak not just authoritatively, but also be brought on board as someone who can look at a wide variety of current affairs issues with an independent voice, meaning that in that sense, I don't owe my voice or my viewpoint to any particular media organization.
Right. Okay.
Of course, you do your work ethically,
yes,
et cetera, transparently. But I think it's been very different, and the issues, et cetera, that I have covered would have been definitely vastly different if I was full-time with an organization.
Right, right. And you can cover the gamut, right, from business to social justice to gender mainstreaming, because these are your areas of interest and not pigeonholed in that way. We'll continue our conversation with Emina Kausji after this. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Burgers from Mamas. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to BFM 89.9. This is Her Vantage, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with independent broadcast journalist and media personality, Temina Kausji. And you know, we're talking about the various things you're doing, have done. You know, you also have a company. What does it do?
Oh, right. So my company, we're basically... what we do is, it is a communications consultancy, and we actually run full-scope client activation for projects and retainers that focus on branding, that focus on taking clients to a different place from where they are currently, with a focus on, and this is the work that we have been doing over the past year and a half in particular, social justice issues and initiatives. And it's been wonderful because my team and I, we've evolved all the way from running campaigns such as Sea Games in 2017, where, you know, we produced and executed all the publicity videos that you would have seen on TV, online, etc., to, you know, brand campaigns for all the FMCGs, think of it, biscuit brands, drink brands, etc. So evolving from, you know, the commercial side of things, first and foremost, for myself, having been a talent who would have been featured in those kind of campaigns, all the way to producing behind the scenes, and then moving finally into social justice, which is what my passion and fuel is. It's been an incredibly challenging, because it's a lot of work, but at the same time, truly, truly fulfilling.
Yeah. Right. You know, so what got you on this trajectory of social justice and gender mainstreaming? What got you so interested in this personally?
I think personally, it's because of, stats don't lie, right? I love my stats. So women make up around 52% of the global population. But at the same time, our voices have always been muted or disproportionately not highlighted, particularly in mainstream media. And it gets even worse when it comes to news media, you know. And I think every issue of the day disproportionately affects women and girls. Climate change, COVID-19, healthcare, infrastructure, public transport. war, disasters, all of it, even education. So a lot of this can be prevented or improved quite immediately with more data, more representation. So I think that's what really led to me bridging this gap very early on. I remember one of the first few interviews I ever did, Freda, for live television or for a recording, was something I did for Tourism Malaysia. We were actually, my producer then, she asked me to do some research on covering Sarawakian women and some of the handicrafts, right? So basically what we got around to, I was doing this interview for Tourism Malaysia, and the research led me down the path of finding out more about Phua Kum Vuh. But you see, when it comes to Phua Kum Vuh, the background of that itself is also deep-seated in the marginalization of women, the fact that there is a lot of social issues that happen in their communities, and how actually manufacturing the Phua Kum Vuh for commercial purposes helps to alleviate them from the background that they're suffering from.
Right.
So everything actually sort of started leading back into, okay, there is injustice, there is inequality, and women and girls appear to be at the core of how we can actually fix these issues, empowering them. And I think that eventually led me down the road of taking a very holistic gender mainstreaming approach to the work that I do.
All right. Now, okay, you participated also in the German Federal Foreign Office's September 2019 Disinformation, Fake News and Media Freedom Workshop, and also the Estonia Development Corporation's June 2019 Journalism and Media Ethics Training, when we could all travel. But anyway, what were some of the key learnings there?
Yeah, so I'll start off with Germany, Freda, even though Germany was what I went to later in the year.
Right.
That was back in September 2019. It was an excellent week-long workshop with about 17 other journalists working in disinformation from countries as diverse as myself from Malaysia. We had journalists from Cameroon, from Pakistan, from Rwanda, from Russia. So it was pretty amazing to see how disinformation, despite the country you come from, the animal is the same thing.
Right.
It's the same thing. Fake news everywhere
comes
from a very similar fount. And yes, it's those WhatsApp groups and those relentless forwards. And, you know, and now we even have that warning. I forwarded it many times. Stop forwarding it.
It's usually our parents, though.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Guilty as charged, I think. But, you know. But Germany was also really interesting, Freda, because we actually had the opportunity to visit the Bundestag, their parliament, and we were welcomed there by one of the leaders of the AfD, Alternative für Deutschland, which is the German nationalist, right-wing populist political party. The politician, the gentleman, and an elderly statesman, and he'd actually spent some time in Malaysia. So it was interesting while I was having a conversation with him. One thing led to another, and it just came out and sort of bubbled up. He was like, "You are quite light for a Malayan." I would say I just held my smile, very politely, you know, thanked him and moved along.
Right.
So other than that, it was interesting to note that in our media and press tours in Berlin, even tabloids like Bild, they have an ombudsman that oversees ethics and, you know, the way in which it operates in the wider ecosystem. So that was really eye-opening to see that Germany, perhaps drawing from its painful past, really sees the need to have an ethical media, a transparent one, and more importantly, actually, educate citizens, educate people right from, you know, kindergarten, primary school upwards. We don't expect people to, you know, become full-fledged human beings with an eye for humanitarianism, with an eye for behaving ethically online, etc., without training, right? So I think that's what is something that countries in ASEAN, Asian countries, Malaysia could learn from.
Right. Okay. So and then, so I was going to ask, you know, like what's still missing Malaysia in the world, right? When you talk about freedom of speech and freedom of information, media ethics, right? Well, I guess like and what can we do as individuals, right? We always say these things, but then what can we do to educate ourselves so that we are making sure that, you know, as much as possible, we are as balanced as possible?
Yeah. I think for the average person, right, not everybody's a journalist,
yeah.
but at the same time, I think we've all been exposed to hate speech, political propaganda, willful misinformation. Mm. So when we come across these, particularly on our social media channels, especially our Twitter, our Facebook, I think it's really important to take a step back, actually at least read what has been presented in front of you, think about it, think on it, ponder, and then respond at a much later time. A personal habit that I have, and my Twitter is actually littered with this. Right. What I do is I draft a post. I don't immediately post it. I actually make a habit of, you know, I'm chewing them up for posting later. And I feel that this has helped not just with time organization, but even more importantly, with ensuring that I am saying the right thing, the sensitive thing. You know, journalistic expression is not a free-for-all. It's speech which is constrained by ethical values. But I do think a page from that can be taken away by every average person too. Mm. Yeah. And even those with especially large social media accounts. This includes politicians, public figures, etc. You know, what you say can be very damaging or very helpful. You know, it's two sides of the divide.
You are responsible, right? I mean, the moment you're given a platform, you are responsible. And I think even as individuals, we are responsible in what we put on our social media platforms, because it is very detrimental, as you say, fake news being spread around as well, right? So what you share, think very wisely before you share, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we really discount how lucky we've actually been, how lucky we've been. Malaysian society, even though it may seem that, you know, the slightest thing sort of sets us off.
Mm.
But I think it's a very healthy society. It's getting healthier.
Right.
And I say this, not completely unironically,
right,
because I feel at least being at the level where you are discussing, even if it's like a flame war online, that is so much better, so much healthier than actual, you know, physical confrontation.
Right.
Which there is a difference. I think our cartoonists, etc., their work is a masterclass in satire, you know? And that is maybe the coping mechanism that Malaysians have for dealing with, you know, certain issues that may be inflammatory, etc. But I do think it's healthy. It's becoming healthier, and it can only get better with more people being more aware of this, so that, you know, your buttons are not constantly being pressed. Because let's not forget, the internet, it's about social media algorithms.
Mm.
What gets a great response is always something which is extremely popular, either for being inflammatory or for being, you know, super cute, like cat videos. Yeah.
All right. Okay. You know, just, I guess, a final question. So what's in store for the new year?
Wow. Okay, the new year. So much to do, so much to see, and I really hope that what I'm going to get to do more of is hopefully travel for work, because COVID, the pandemic, and travel restrictions really put a damper on the work that I have been able to do. Everything's had to be virtual, digital, but at the same time, I think what I want to do more of is see a lot more value be created from the things that we have been doing digitally, the things that we've been doing online. No longer just something that we are doing because we've been forced to move online, but because it is truly something that brings actually more value. Think of it this way, you know? Like, let's say when we used to MC an event, you maybe have a captive audience of, let's say, 200 to 10,000, max, right?
Mm.
But now, it's like everybody puts their...
your video
or their events online, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And honestly, I've done several launches this year for in online formats that reached millions of viewers.
Right.
And it was basically for the same type of thing, product, etc., that it was in the past. So I think it's the digital arena has really opened up not just opportunity but an understanding of maximizing it. So wanting to do a lot more of that and hoping things get a lot more streamlined for 2021.
Right, all the best for 2021. It's been a pleasure speaking to you, Temina Kausji. You've been listening to Her Vantage on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.